Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with health and longevity, as well as making a positive difference in the world and so much more. Now, having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, I am grateful to have met and worked with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I want you to know that you can all do me a big favor. Okay, please check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as some dynamic co-hosts discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to our social media group or someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Well, I want to let everybody know that I am practicing social distancing. And for those of you that are watching either through Facebook Live or through YouTube, you will see that I'm doing my best to distance myself. I'm really glad to be able to say that I have a guest co-host today who's been with us before, and that is dating and relationship expert Christine Baumgartner. Now, Christine works with singles who are frustrated with their dating life and are ready to finally and lovingly partner with someone when they're willing to tackle what's keeping love away so that they'll finally attract the committed, loving relationship they desire and they deserve. Now, Christine, before we speak with our guest, I found that people are very concerned and confused about how, or even if they can, date during our physical distancing period of time right now. So what do you suggest that they do?
Thanks, Alan. It is such a hot topic right now because people say, well, we can't meet, so that means we can't date. And I'm here to tell you, I, as a dating coach, think it's the perfect time to be meeting new people virtually. The first step is to figure out what you really want and need. So if you have in the past dated and it wasn't successful, it might be because you're not really clear about what you need and want. So that's what I do. I call it getting ready to date. And then when you are ready to date, reaching out through online dating or meetups. I've been on 4 different meetups that are Zoom calls. Mm-hmm. So it's a great way to get together with people. And what I believe as a dating coach is it's kind of good to delay the physical side of a relationship till you get to know each other better. So if you can't meet in person, the physical delay is mandatory. And that way you really get to know each other on a deeper level and you can ask those challenging questions. I've also come up with this whole fun list of things that people can do as they're getting to know each other on video. You can pick a recipe and cook together. You can learn a dance step. You can learn a language. You can tour a museum. You can watch a movie. Because these are the kinds of things you might be doing on a date anyway. And you can still do these even if you're not together. And what you're doing is you're paying attention to what you need and want in a relationship and if they have those. So are you the kind of person like I am that you need a recipe to follow? Or are you the kind of person like my late husband who could look in the refrigerator and make a 3-course meal? So you learn that kind of stuff if you cook together over the computer. You learn if how do you get frustrated if you're learning something new, if you're learning a dance step together? How do people handle that frustration? How do they handle if they're feeling impatient? More than you necessarily would if you're just across the table having coffee or lunch together. So I really believe I am the kind of person that's always looking for the other side of the coin. Yep, this is crappy. I'm not happy about being stuck home alone because I am this social butterfly. But what is the other side of it that's positive? And with dating, it's going to keep you safer because you're not going to have some of those potential scary things happen when you're meeting somebody, which I can give you a list of keeping safe. But also you get to know them on a more deep level before you have all that chemical hormone fog stuff happen.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And taking it from the male side, I know that, once it becomes physical, I think for a lot of us, we start thinking with other parts of our anatomy, and it doesn't necessarily mean we're making the best choices. So so I think I agree with you. I think, people can look at this as something that they may be able to meet somebody that they find a much deeper sense of connection with them before they actually bring that physical part into it. So I think you're right on target. Now, for anybody that now wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to do that?
So I think the best way is to go to my website, which is www.theperfectcatch.com. Because I think you need to become the perfect catch, and then you will attract the perfect catch, because that's what happened for me.
Very well.
At the top of my website is a form that's called What's Holding You Back from Love. And if you fill that out, you can then have a 1-hour complimentary conversation with me. And it'll be like a first date. We can talk about the things that are working and not working and see if we're a match. Because not everybody's a match for everybody else. And that's how you get a chance to find out. And I can give you some more clues about how to come up with I'm curious questions that don't feel like interviewing or interrogating, because we're all worried about that, but we still need to find out about more about them. So it's much better if you're asking it from an I'm curious way than an interrogating way.
I think that's great. And I just want to put a little bit of clarity for anybody out there that might have misunderstood. When you're filling that out and then doing that 1-hour consultation, that's to see if Christine's a good match as a coach for you. Okay.
Thanks for clarifying.
You might all of a sudden get a lot more business than you're expecting.
Different business than I was looking for. Yes.
Exactly.
Thank you. That was so good of you to clarify. You have no idea how much I needed a laugh today. So that was great. Thank you.
Well, and I think with what's going on, I think we all do. Now, our topic today is very interesting. And I'm someone who's worked in the mental health field now for about 40 years. And when my producer, Jan, told me about our guest's book, and I thought, this is something we haven't touched on, but it's so incredibly important because we're talking about living with someone with a mental illness. And the title of her new book is called Don't Go Crazy Without Me, Living with a Parent Who Went From Neurotic to Full-Blown Psychotic. And again, when I learned about it, and I thought a perfect topic for our show, but also something that hasn't really been touched on out there. And I'm really glad that we're getting this opportunity. So let me tell you a little bit about our guest, because her name is Deborah A. Lott, and she studied English literature and film at UCLA. After working in publishing in Boston, Massachusetts, she continued her editing career with Peace Press, a collectively organized printer published dedicated to advancing the cause of social justice, feminism, and environmentalism. Her projects there encompassed learning about the Zen of a piano. You're going to have to explain that one to me. Eating wild herbs alongside the Los Angeles River, howling with the wolves with Dina Metzger. Now, I may have howled at the wolves, but haven't done that with Dina. And spending a day with Black Panther pioneer Huey Newton. Now, she went on to serve as a contributing editor to Psychiatric Times and as senior consulting writer-editor for the UCLA Drake University National Center for Child Traumatic Stress. Now, as a reporter for Psychiatric Times, Deborah became fascinated by the dynamics in the psychotherapy room and the privileged language of psychotherapy practice. She interviewed several hundred therapy clients and noted therapists about transference and the boundary dilemmas in psychotherapy. Now, her years of research led to her her first book, which is called In Session, The Bond Between Women and Their Therapist. I would imagine that being able to speak to all of those people and looking into transference probably was incredibly helpful when you found yourself in the situation you were in. So, Deborah, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hi, Alan. Nice to meet you.
But I'm so glad to have you here. And again, as I said, I think it's such a great topic. And I think to start off with share a little bit about what was going on in your life and then how this led to you writing essentially a memoir.
Well, let me just give you a little bit of the context of my family. So we were among the only Jews living in La Crescenta, which is a suburb of LA, which at that time was pretty isolated. So we were a Jewish family. My parents had both been kind of leftist activists in college. So we were an eccentric kind of outcast family for starters. And then on top of that, my father didn't like to get dressed. So he tended to be in his underwear a lot. He would be in his underwear on the front porch. Didn't care if the neighbors saw, liked to be outrageous. Eccentric. When I grew up, I thought he was sort of lovably neurotic. We would go to a movie theater and sometimes he would get thrown out for laughing really loudly. At my 10th birthday party, he dressed up like Little Lord Fauntleroy, which didn't go well with the other girls because, I thought, well, it'll be like watching TV, like they've seen Red Skelton on TV dress up like a little boy. But instead, it was kind of shocking to them. And I would have these moments in childhood where I'd be like, he's not quite like their dad's mom died. He kind of took a downward turn. And he'd always liked to take a lot of downers. He'd always been sort of into barbiturates and sleeping pills. And he was probably bipolar 1 and undiagnosed. So he would have highs and lows. And then when his mom died, he just completely lost it and was unable to grieve her in any kind of healthy way. And I started to go nuts with him. Ultimately, he was psychotic to the point where he thought that my mother and my uncle were plotting to murder him. Wow. And he would ask me to spy on them for him.
Wow. You've told us a little bit about your father. Now, share a little bit about your mother, because how did she deal with all of this?
So my mother was kind of the classic enabler. She was very withdrawn emotionally, and she let him do all the feeling for her. So he would be loud, and she'd be kind of like, oh, stop, but she kind of enjoyed it. And she wasn't very demonstrative physically. She wasn't very emotionally expressive. So I gravitated towards him. I was more like him. I was kind of anxious like him. I was kind of hypochondriacal like him. So we formed a real bond, and I had trouble feeling close to my mom. We could have these long intellectual conversations. She was very smart, but it was tough to get any sort of emotional warmth from her.
I've got a question that not only would I like your answer, but then I think I'd like Christine to comment on it as well. Once you became a teenager, how did that affect your ability to date?
Well, I think dating actually saved me. I think on a certain level, sex kind of saved me. None of the boys in La Crescenta would date me because they didn't date Jewish girls, I think. And they thought I was weird, and maybe I was weird, and maybe I was Jewish, and I don't know what all the cumulative weirdnesses added up to, but they wouldn't. So I started going to this thing called B'nai B'rith Girls, which was a girls' club for Jewish girls where they would have socials once a week and like import boys from the valley. So they imported this cute boy, and I started going to the drive-in with him, and we would just like make out the whole night. Sorry, Christine, it was not social distancing and didn't get to know each other very well, but I had a different experience in my body with him because my dad had kind of taught me that the body was a source of disease and illness, and it was confusing. And then it was great to have a different experience. But then I tended to date a lot of crazy guys. In the years after that, I would date guys that were kind of like my dad and try to rescue them.
So, Christine, you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yes. And all that exploration as a teenager, it's really difficult to not let your hormones go. And I'm glad that it had some positive sides for you. And it sounds like you had some good things come out of it, because often what happens is when I coach, most of my clients are 50 and older, that the bad experience, what they consider bad experiences, getting their heart broken, bad sexual experiences, people who were mean, men who were mean to them, left them, that it, we start filling up this U-Haul truck behind us with all this baggage, you know, and then you bring it to every relationship. And then you're wondering why you're always having people show up that are like that. Why are they all wrong for you? I told people I perfected dating people that I would never marry.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And because that's truly all we know. I dated the worst parts of both my man, my mom and my dad. And it's the part we're comfortable with. It's the part we think we deserve. And until we, as it sounds like you've done, you know, you go to therapy and you do some self-exploration and you think, oh, is that really working for me? Do I really like that now? Is that really who I am? Is that working for me now? And start unpacking that big U-Haul truck, because I was amazed that my truck could have held a house of five people down to something that would fit in an overhead bin, my goal. And I did that. That's the only way I met my late husband. I wouldn't have without that. So that's my thought about, we are conditioned, can do nothing about it as children. It's just like we're like a sponge. We just absorb, we deal, we handle, we process as much as we can. And then as an adult, we go, is this working?
Yeah. And I changed my dating habits as I got older. And after I went through therapy, I wound up marrying a man much more like my mother than my father.
Wow.
So, Deborah, one of the things I know you touch on a lot in the book is you talk about bodies and kind of the things that your father did that may have given you a different focus in regards to our bodies and such. And one of the examples that you mention is him being more of a hypochondriac. And one of the examples was that you say that when he would open up a can of tuna, he would have you kids circle around. And then when it would pop, he would tell you that, I want you all to see this because it proves that it's not contaminated. There's this thing of, you know, it's okay, we have our bodies. And is he focusing on this from the standpoint of saying you have to be very careful what you put into it? Did he think that there was a conspiracy that people were trying to poison the tuna?
I think he thought there was botulism in everything. It was always botulism, which made no sense because botulism is an anaerobe. So if the can is sealed, then it can have botulism. But knowing that the air enters the can does not protect you from that. So there's one episode in Don't Go Crazy where my mother had a migraine. So he was charged with making lunch. So first of all, and there were a million different things we were going to eat that didn't go together, sardines and tomato soup and whatever we wanted. But then he would line up all the cans, wash them, dry them with a dish towel, let the dish towel fall to his feet because it was contaminated because he had touched it and he had touched the dirty can. And then me and my two brothers would circle around him. He would take the can opener in hand, poise it over the can. We would all lean in so that our ears were right over the can. And he would slowly puncture the lid so we could hear the puff. And then he'd go, did you hear the puff? Did you hear the puff? And I would be even more terrified. And I'd go, Daddy, are you sure you heard the puff? Are you sure you heard the puff? Are you sure you heard the puff? And then sometimes for hours afterwards, I would think I had botulism, which is reminiscent now of some of my friends who think they have COVID every time they feel a little scratch in their throat or anytime they feel a little tickle in their nose, they're ready to go get tested. but it was like that. And I had a very vivid imagination, which I probably inherited from him. And I could just imagine the botulism growing in my body. So it didn't really help me. The ritual helped him because it calmed him down. He would eat with abandon. He would just eat like crazy. There was exhibition eating that he would engage in. But that was just one of his rituals. Another thing that he did with food was he would never eat the part of a piece of bread that his hand touched. So even though he would wash his hands over and over and over again, like people are washing their hands now, only probably for more like 60 seconds than 20 seconds, he would still throw away the part of the piece of bread his hand had touched.
Well, the good news is that he would not have gotten the COVID-19.
Maybe.
Oh, the effect on children.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it. What Christine's bringing up is that it's very interesting, the effect and how these things have affected you, which is, again, one of the reasons why it's a really good book for people to get. Because if you're raising children to be able to read things, it can then tell you, look, this is contributing to this in the future. And I know, in fact, another, you mentioned also in the book that as a teenager, you were diagnosed as being schizophrenic yourself. And how did you get that corrected? And, what was it like to go from one therapist to the other with them saying that you're schizophrenic or you're not? And what were they basing this on?
Breaking up a little bit, but I think. I think you're asking about how the diagnosis, how I got misdiagnosed and then corrected.
Yes. Yes. Yes, I am.
Because I'm getting a network bandwidth is low thing.
Okay. Well, Ronan is listening to us. So whatever it is that can be done, I'm sure he's doing on his end.
Okay. So anyway, so when my father really went off the deep, I started to lose it too. I did not know how to deal with my grandmother's death, and I had never seen a dead person before. And once I saw her dead in her coffin, I could not get that image out of my head. So I started to devise some elaborate rituals to try to ward off the image. And then there was more and more sort of OCD-ish kind of stuff. And I started to see connections between things that weren't connected and read everything as being omens. And so I was getting pretty out there. And then by the time my father was actually committed to the mental institution, my mother took me to UCLA to Neuropsychiatric Institute. And I saw a young psychiatrist who I don't think he was very experienced, but I said some pretty wacky stuff to him. And I think he decided that I was psychotic and diagnosed me as being paranoid schizophrenic, which my mother right away did not believe. As soon as I came out of the office, she said, "What mishigas?" I don't know if you know what mishigas is, but it's a Yiddish word for crazy. "What craziness did you tell him to make him think that?" She never believed it. And then much later, I went to another psychiatrist who was kind of a cult figure. He led encounter groups. It was the 70s, so there were encounter groups, and there was a lot of sensitivity training. And he just basically said to me, "This is a story you've told yourself. This is a nutty story, and you better find some better stories to tell yourself." And it kind of snapped me out of it.
Well, now, when he meant tell better stories, did he mean the stories you were telling about your father or the stories about how you felt it was affecting you?
I think he meant I was telling these nutty stories where everything was connected and there were evil energies out to get me. And I thought the dead people were out to get me. I had like a whole line, and he listened to it, but he didn't think I was psychotic. He thought I just had, what my mother had always called an overactive imagination. And he just kind of said, "I think you're a writer. I think you need to be a writer." And just started writing some different kinds of stories. And he gave me a hug, which I'm not sure therapists should always be hugging their clients, but this was the 70s. And he gave me a hug, and he was kind of an alternate father figure. He was this like big bear of a guy who had sort of a cult following. And I believed him. I just believed him. And he kind of said, knock it off. And I was kind of able to knock it off.
I like him already. You know, seriously, I mean, you know, I like the concept of, you know, getting right to the point. There's no reason to go in and have, you know, 42 sessions to figure that out. You know, if you have a parent who's telling you something that is probably out there, and when we're young, we tend to believe it. I mean, that's part of what we do is we believe our parents. So I think for somebody to come in and say, look, just because you've been told this doesn't make it right. And
it gave you an alternate way of looking at life that you've never experienced before, it sounds like.
Right.
Nobody ever opened that particular door for you.
Yeah. And then I think the other thing that saved me is that I was able to get into the world with other people. I became a volunteer in Robert F. Kennedy's presidential campaign. So I found a world larger than my family, larger than the community, and started to like embrace social justice causes where I had something larger to think about than my own nutty family.
I like it.
People's perspectives to hear, it sounds like.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And then I was there the night that Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated. I was actually at the Ambassador as a youth volunteer.
Wow.
So, and that was strangely a kind of saving experience because I saw adults grieving. I saw adults on the spot grieving.
All right. Well, we have some listener questions that have come in. So we have one that says that I was so struck by your story. My mother was OCD and my father, who was much older than she, developed dementia in his late 50s. The more time that passed, the more paranoid and angry he became. You know, I so adored my dad as my savior when escaping my mother's neuroses that I felt I had lost him. So helpless I became depressed myself. Parents in those conditions are too deep in their own emotional and mental issues to realize what it is doing to us, their children. I can't wait to read the book and to share it with my fellow teachers and counselors at our school. And this is from June in Minnesota.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That sounds tough because when you have one good parent that you're relying on and then you lose that parent, that sounds really sad. That sounds really hard.
Well, I want to thank the person that's June. I want to thank June for sending in the question. And please let us know after you get the book, let us know, you know, how it helped. And you can go to the Answers for the Family website, or you can also go directly to Deborah's, and that's going to be DeborahALott.com. So that's DeborahALott, A as in apple, LOTT.com. If you go to her site, I'm sure she would love to hear, you know, how it has helped you by getting the book.
Right, and I'm also like really interested in doing Zoom book groups. So if people have book groups and they want to have me come as a guest, I'd be happy to talk about the book and do. I mean, I think that the new social distancing book groups are having to meet on Zoom as well, and I'm happy to visit a book group anywhere in the country.
What a generous offer.
Yes, it is. I appreciate it.
And then they could actually talk to the author. In my book clubs, I've always wanted to do that. Because you always get the questions, you know, in the back of the book. Here's some questions to ask each other. I'm like, but I want to ask them.
That's great.
Right.
I know.
So, I think more and more authors are doing
that
too. Yeah. Well, you're going to start a trend.
I'm happy to start any trend I can start.
All right. Well, we have another question that came in, and this one reads, my husband started showing signs of bipolar disorder a year after we were married. When we moved to his hometown, I got a double dose of reality as his sister and father were as difficult as he was. His mother, who I truly loved, explained that his sister was diagnosed, but that my husband and his father had refused treatment, so they never got a specific diagnosis. So it says, expecting our first child, I was trapped in what was turned into a very abusive relationship. It took packing my bags and buying an airline ticket to convince him to get help. Thankfully, after 10 years, we have a happy family. He even got his father on board to seek help. Of note, it was not just medication. We added proper nutrition and meditation. I bought your book on Kindle and just love it. I highly recommend it for everyone. It was a great read. And this is from Tamara in Kentucky. Were you able to get that?
You're frozen for me again. I'm so sorry, yeah, Ellen. You're frozen.
I thought it might be a problem because I saw that you guys had froze.
I'm getting network bandwidth is low. Oh, no.
This is our second time trying to make this work. So, without going into studio, because we're doing our own social distancing. So we are having a few Zoom problems here. And it looks like Sam is on with us, so he probably has room.
I don't know if it's coming from your end or my end. Yeah, I don't know I don't have enough network bandwidth, or you don't have enough.
Well, it may, I don't know. I shouldn't even try to guess.
Network bandwidth. Maybe because you're way out.
Yes, that's the problem. I'm too far away because I'm in outer space. That's the problem. So were you able to hear any of that last question and comments?
I just heard the first part about her husband becoming clearly bipolar, and then she realized the family was also difficult. But what was the actual question?
Well, and actually then, yes, it's important that I say the last part because there is a happy ending. So she put, thankfully, after 10 years, we have a happy family. And he even got his father on board to get treatment. And she puts of note, it was not just medication. We added proper nutrition and meditation. She says that, I just bought your book on Kindle and just love it. So I highly recommend it to everyone. It was a great read. And it's from Tamara in Kentucky.
Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, I think what's really sad is that there were not good treatments, and my dad never really got diagnosed. There have been other family members with bipolar 1, and I'm pretty sure that's what his problem was. But really, all they had at that time was shock treatment, and he went through shock treatment, which it didn't really help. I mean, it calmed him down, I think, but he still had the same nutty beliefs. And he, after he came home from the mental hospital, and he just said, I know enough not to talk about this stuff because it'll get me locked up again. But he hadn't stopped believing any of the great stuff he.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that he just figured out how to work the system and to pretty much tell them what they needed to know to keep himself from being locked up again. Well, I'm really sorry to our listeners. No. It looks like we're frozen.
Yeah, he never really.
Go ahead.
Are you frozen for everybody, not just me?
Yeah.
I thought it was me.
No, it's not just you.
It's never just you. You're welcome.
I always assume it's me. I mean, what did I do? What pathology did I bring to this situation to freeze the screen?
Boy, yep. And so I'm so curious, and I'm sure it's in your book, but I would love to ask you, because for everything that we inherit, the emotional baggage we inherit from our families, we find our own path of recovery. Yeah, I can tell that you're frozen.
Oh,
yeah. I can hear you though. I love you. Hi.
Well, Christine, as long as you're not frozen, go ahead and keep going with the question.
Okay. And comment. So, to like an alcoholic, you know, what 12 steps do they do and sponsors they do, that when you have this kind of baggage that you've really seen, unpacked, worked through, it's always going to be there, though. It is always, we're always recovering from whatever it is. It's never gone. And I would love to hear, you know, some of the ways that you do that in your daily life when stress comes up, when the COVID, you know, the virus, when you've come from family that was hyper germ focused.
Yeah.
So curious to hear more about it. I'm assuming a lot of it's in your book, but I'd love to hear what you say about it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, this pushes every button I've got. This COVID, I mean, I think it pushes a lot of people's buttons. And I think a lot of people that you would never think their buttons would be being pushed are getting as nutty as me. I actually find that some of my friends with anxiety disorders are less anxious than the people without, because we kind of know how to be anxious.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, see, we told you so. We told you the world was ending. I have to talk myself down a lot. I have to try to reason with myself as much as possible. I can start to spiral out of control. I can start to, I mean, I think a lot of it is trying to stay in the present moment and not staying in the moment in your own experience. I see freezing again.
Yeah, but we can hear you, so keep going.
Am I frozen too?
No,
your face freezes, but then we can hear your voice still. And then your face catches up.
Okay.
An interesting experience.
All right, I'll just keep talking.
Please do.
Actually, I'll tell you what, we've only got about another minute anyway. So just again, just to kind of wrap up, give everybody again where they can find the book, how they can get in touch with you. Okay. I love the fact that you're willing to do book groups with people. And for everybody, that if you're on Facebook Live, there's a picture of the book right there.
There's a book, Don't Go Crazy Without Me. That's my dad dressed up like Little Lord Fauntleroy. That's me. The book is available anywhere books are sold online. You can get it directly from the distributor, Ingram. You can get it from my publisher, Red Hand Press. You can probably get it from Amazon. I think someone called in and said they got the Kindle already. I think they can get the book from Amazon as well. And my website is deborahalaw.com. And yeah, please feel free to write to me there, and I will get back to whoever. I love to hear from readers.
Well, Deborah, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. Sorry about some of the technical difficulties. But again, keep up the good work. When you get ready and you have the next book in you, please come back on and let's talk about that as well.
Right. Thank you so much, Alan. And thank you, Christine.
It's been a delight, even more than I expected.
That's great.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And for everybody out there, and there towards the end, I know we were talking a little bit about the coronavirus. And I just want everybody to know that we are incredibly concerned about it. So much so that our next guest on Monday that's going to be joining us is Dr. Gordon Peterson to discuss the silver miracle. And it's why is silver the greatest tool for restoring and protecting health that's been discovered by science? Because according to Dr. Peterson, because the coronavirus is a virus and it has been proven that alkaline structured silver will destroy viruses. And it not only will help protect you from the coronavirus, but it'll help people recover more quickly who are suffering from it. Now, this is a structured alkaline silver that can also benefit other viruses like influenza and bacterial secondary infections as well. And one of the things, I talk to people a lot about the fact that I feel that I have a very strong immune system, I'm very healthy, and I have a spray. Besides the fact of having some that I take about a half a teaspoonful every morning, but I have a spray in my car, and I spray it in the mouth, in the back of my mouth. So what happens is that if by chance a virus were to get to my mouth, by having this coating of the colloidal silver in my mouth, it kills it right there. So again, this is something that a lot of people aren't talking about. So we really worked at trying to get Dr. Pedersen to get on the show so that we can bring this information to you. So please be sure and listen next week, because it's going to be, I think, something that will help all of us and hopefully keep all of us just a little bit healthier. And please, for everybody, visit our archives of past shows at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Vimeo, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and iHeartRadio. And on Facebook Live, you can now see it through video as well as on YouTube. You know, if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and continue to spread the word. Christine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Alan. It's always such a pleasure. And wow, what a fascinating guest.
Yes, absolutely.
And as always.
And for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.